Welcome back to today's Topical Currents. I'm Bonnie Berman. Joseph Cooper, recovering from his back surgery and planning his return to WLRN. So we're all thrilled to hear that news. Today we tackle a very difficult issue, that of when to euthanize a pet. So many of us have been faced with this painful decision, always wondering if we'll know when it's time, and what are some of the signs, and how can we avoid the mistake of waiting too long and causing suffering for our pet. We're at your service today, joined by regular contributors, veterinarian Dr. Ian Kupke, who's the owner and lead practitioner at Kendall's Sable Chase Animal Clinic. Welcome. Great to have you back.
Great to be here, Bonnie.
As always. Also with us is canine behaviorist and trainer Adele Mieres. He operates Canine Advisors. Adele's also very familiar with feline behavior. And we welcome you, Adele.
Thank you, Bonnie.
So as usual, we'll begin on one topic, but your other questions and concerns are also welcome. Both our guests are ready for your questions at 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576. Email is radio@wlrn.org, or you can tweet us at Topical Currents. So to begin, it's sort of unusual for me to get personal, but I've decided to in this case, because I've experienced this pain too many times, and I think we all might be able to benefit from my situations and predicaments. And I can say that my extreme distress was twofold: my confusion about knowing when it was or was not the right time, and it was clouded by terrible difficulty in letting go for me. So I always felt I did it too early, I did it too late, I've done it a number of times. So let's begin there. Dr. Kupke, how do we know when it's time? Are there clear signs, or are they always muddled?
And that really is the crux of it. The short answer is often that you just know, and that's nice. If something in that sixth sense that controls the invisible bond we have with our pet tells us that it's time. We actually had to euthanize a wonderful cattle dog named Floyd at our practice, and the family was agonizing over whether it was the right time or not. And even as we were letting him go, he looked up at the owner, put his paw on their hand, and just literally you could just see the love and peace in his eyes, and you knew it was time. And that is beautiful, but it's not always as easy as that. For want of a better word.
No.
The problem is, first of all, you need to be thoroughly understanding your pet's condition. And that's where a good relationship with your veterinarian comes into play. Understand what it is that your pet has, what it is your pet's going through. Most importantly, what is it your pet is going to go through? And I think that this is one of the things that's helped me make these sorts of decisions, is not so much to spare them from suffering now as to spare them from suffering later. And that's a lot of where we find some comfort in making the right choice, is knowing where this might be going.
But doesn't that feel like it's preemptive? I mean, if you say, well, they have kidney disease, they're going to go into renal failure, but do you want to do it before?
No. Well, it's very personal, but I think that knowing where your pet is going is going to help you to watch for signs that process is starting to unfold. For example, you mentioned a caller who has mentioned that their pet was diagnosed with osteosarcoma. It's a horrible disease to have.
Well, it's actually an emailer whose American Bulldog was diagnosed with sarcoma, and his pain meds are keeping him comfortable. This is Danielle. Mm-hmm. He's lost 7 pounds, lays around, and they're trying to decide when to put him down. Should pain be the decider or quality
right,
of life?
Right. And osteosarcoma in and of itself, it can be a very painful condition, but all God's creatures are different, and dogs handle discomfort, some well, some not so well. So what you need to do is knowing what the disease can do, be honest about changes in habits or routines that your pet might have, consider assessing your pet's quality of life often, and we actually have this wonderful little cheat list. It was actually made by a place called Lap of Love Veterinary Hospice.
Lap of Love.
Lap of Love. It's available at lapoflove.com. You can also see it on my website under Saying Goodbye. And it's a pet quality of life scale. It's literally a form that goes over some crucial factors about day-to-day life. Mobility, nutrition, whether they're eating, whether they interact with you or not, whether they can control their potty habits, whether they can do the things that define them as who they are, things that they love to do, if they love to play ball or they love to just sit on your lap and watch TV.
Right.
And the forum invites you to rate those on a short scale, usually 0 to 2, and be honest. And once you've done that, I was just talking about this with Adele. Put that to one side. Date it. Come back to the form, a blank form, in a month. Fill it out again without remembering what you did before and compare the two forms. And that will often tell you where things are going. You don't want to hold out for a natural passing.
Yeah,
that is
I
the
think
last
most
thing
of
you
us want
to,
you know.
Because unfortunately, very, very rarely does anyone just pass in the night beautifully
go
and peacefully.
Go to sleep. And
even if that's the case, don't you want to be with them during that transition? Don't you want to be with them at the end? Another way of assessing quality of life is, we call this the penny jar system, where basically you've got two jars, a jar labeled good day and a jar labeled bad days. And each day, just put a penny in one of the jars. And for people like me who are very visual in the way I learn, over time you'll see one side mount up over the other, and that kind of tells you where things are going.
How do we know if a pet is in pain or not? Like the Danielle, she's giving her dog pet meds,
mm-hmm.
but I mean pain meds.
Yes.
But how do we know still if they're in pain? And I'm thinking cats, they don't show pain.
A lot of it is changed behavior. Dogs, cats are creatures of routine. They do things that they do every day.
Right.
And so it's watching for changes in that. It's like it's watching for whether they still eat, whether they still drink, whether they still go to the bathroom, whether they still like to do the things they love to do. You know, with dogs, I have a little game with my little dachshund called Find It, where I hide a treat somewhere in the house and let her find it, and she'll go and sniff around the whole house and find that one little piece of kibble. And she loves to do that more than anything else in the world. So if she gets to a point where she can't do that because she's in too much pain, that might be something I need to think about.
Adele?
Yes.
I just want to bring you into it a little.
As you know, I'm going through this myself with a 21-year-old Chihuahua that we've had in our house for many years now. And, you know, one of the factors for us personally is she is still a reminder of our grandmother who passed away 10 years ago. And it's difficult, for example, for my wife to hold on or let her go, rather, holding on to the memory of her grandmother with this little dog, Canela, the little Chihuahua. And so it's difficult for us. And it's funny, Dr. Kupke just mentioned this about looking at that scale, mm-hmm. from Lap of Love and doing that survey, and perhaps a month or sometime later doing it again. Well, without me knowing that specifically, I just did that about 6 weeks ago with this Chihuahua, and she was actually very good 6 weeks ago. Still somewhat mobile for the most part, great appetite, and a lot has changed in just a few weeks. And now if I look at that scale again, it definitely would be a different number, which tells me that her quality of life is definitely lessened dramatically. So we're actually faced with this decision very shortly, maybe in the next day or two.
Oh, my.
So it is something that we're going through ourselves. And in doing so, I think it helps to either comfort or perhaps advise others that may be going through the same.
Well, let's talk to Ed in Delray Beach, who wants to talk about his dog. Hi, Ed. Welcome.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. Thank you.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a little wire-haired Dachshund, very sweet. He's going to be 15. He's got a lot of moles all over him. The vet says they're not cancerous, but he can barely walk. And every night I put him in his dog bed, and in the morning I find him in the bathroom on the mat. Seems to me like he's, I don't know if he's preparing to die or I don't know what kind of, what that action means. I was wondering if you could give me some insight into that.
Well, one of the things that that I did with my little Chihuahua, when that started happening, she would get out of her bed and she would move about and she'd end up somewhere else.
Right.
She's mostly blind and deaf. So one of the things that we did was we got a playpen that's all padded, like a little playpen for a child. It's all padded, and it kept her safe in one area. It gave her enough space to move about. We put pee pads all around the playpen, and I put these rolled up shirts all along the edges so her little paws can't get caught up on the edge. And so they have some mobility, but if they kind of fall over or anything, they have support. The sides of these pens are kind of like a mesh, a very light cotton mesh type. And so that works well when they're still mobile like that.
Okay, but that type of behavior then is indicative, I'm assuming. And the other thing I was going to mention is that, you know, he still wags his tail. He's still happy to greet us. So, I mean, I don't know if it's selfish. I don't want to do anything until that behavior disappears.
Well, you know, I'm kind of in the same boat. My little Doxy isn't that far behind. And, you know, I think that as long as that tail wags, from a veterinary perspective, that means that the spinal column's working because the tail wouldn't wag if if there was a back problem. With a Nadoxy is important.
Yeah.
The fact that they're wagging their tail tells me that there's still love there and there's still life there. You know, age in and of itself is not a disease. It's just a stage in life, and I want to be with my little dog until she doesn't want to be here anymore. You know.
Right.
It's going to be hard, you know, but, you know, as a veterinarian, you know, we understand what the letting go process involves. Is basically, it's an overdose of anesthesia. It causes the brain to slip away into a sleep of sorts, and eventually they pass. But for me, I want that to be something that I'm there for her to help her with that, but I still want her to enjoy her life right up to the end. You see,
right?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for calling. Good luck to you.
Okay. Thanks. Bye.
Bye. Bye. We're speaking with Dr. Ian Kupke of Sable Chase Animal Clinic and Adele Mieres of Canine Advisors about other issues, too. We're talking about when it's time to let go of our pets, but we'll take your calls and your emails, 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576, or radio@wlrn.org. Welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman visiting with veterinarian Dr. Ian Kupke of Sable Chase Animal Clinic and dog behaviorist and cat Adele Mieres of Canine Advisors. We're talking about euthanizing our beloved pets, but we'll also take more issues. We're going to expand to go on to other things. 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-9576. Questions about your animals or email is radio@wlrn.org. Marilyn in Boynton Beach has been waiting. Hi, Marilyn. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi. Go ahead.
This is Marilyn. I have a female Shih Tzu who is presently 13 years old and recently, back in March, was diagnosed with a lung tumor, you know, cancer, And all of a sudden, the life just totally took a turn for the worse. And I started to see her slowly going downhill. And my veterinarian asked me if I wanted to put her down. And I looked at him and I said, no, I don't think so today. No, I got to go home and talk about this to my husband, and we have to think about this. And then as time went on, we learned that we could give her a shot. We could give her a steroid, and this would make her more comfortable, and this could prolong it. Well, here we are in August, and we've been giving these shots like every month, and I have to say that to some degree that it has changed her, you know, like she gets a little boost, and suddenly, you know, she'll start to eat again. And if I mention the thing that she enjoys the most is going for a ride in the car, she'll get up and she'll walk towards the garage and she'll be anxious to go in the car. When she's in the car, she's very relaxed, looking at me, looking out the window, and then I take her places to, you know, to do a BM and urinate and all that stuff, and then we come home. And then I see a total change. Mm-hmm. She collapses. She's skin and bones. And in order to get her to eat sometimes, I have to mix the food with cream cheese and do anything to help her. She takes enalapril and Lasix, and this other medication begins with a V. Vetadrin, or something like that.
That'll be Vetmedin, probably.
Thank you.
Yeah. So what do you think, Dr. Kupke?
Well, realize that the shots, I mean, I won't know specifically what the injections are, but I would venture a guess that it's some kind of steroid. That's usually
it's like
the
a
protocol.
Cortisone.
Yeah. That does help temporarily, like you say, a bit of a boost. It doesn't really change the underlying process, but it does make her feel better for a while. And sometimes it will even temporarily reduce a tumor and make it less uncomfortable. But I think it really goes back to that quality of life scale I mentioned earlier. You know, I was going over it during the break. Mobility is important. She does seem to be more mobile after the injections, but then it exhausts her afterwards. So basically she needs more rest. Is she eating? Is she drinking? Can she control her potty habits? These are all factors to consider.
Yes, she is eating. When she's ready, she could surprise us. She really, I mean, I'm amazed that sometimes that she drinks so much water and that she eats so well. And then a day will go by that she's not interested, and then she'll snap back, and then she'll start eating again.
Mm. And it's a process, you know. It's one of these things where I think we all know where this is headed. It's just a case of making that decision as to when. And that's where that quality of life assessment sheet comes in. Probably I would do one now, do one in another 4 weeks, see how they compare.
And that's lapoflove.com for the assessment sheet. Okay, Marilyn, thank you.
Thank you very much, guys.
Okay, let's talk to Peter in Miami. And again, our number, questions about your pet on any subject, actually, 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576. Email is radio@wlrn.org. Hi, Peter.
Hi. Hello?
Hi, go ahead.
I have a... actually, we got her as a puppy from the pound, and she's like half lab. But she acts like a dog that had been abused in the past, which is impossible because she was a puppy. However, she's always afraid of everything, of everyone. She's very, very smart, but she walks around sometimes in depression, anxiety. I really don't know what to do to help her.
How old is this dog?
It's just turned two.
Just turned two?
Yes.
Okay, so it's a relatively young dog.
Yes, it is.
And has she been seen by her veterinarian recently?
Yes, she's been seen by the vet. She would take very good care of her. She's had all her shots. She's been to puppy training school and all that sort of thing. But it's just like she suffers from depression and she's afraid of everything.
She may need some confidence building, but have you done a blood test on her?
No, I have not.
I would run a blood panel. Sometimes there's an imbalance. Hormonal imbalances can cause that. And oftentimes that can be found through a blood panel. That would be my first suggestion, so you can rule out anything physiologically. Psychologically, there's probably a number of things that you can do to increase her confidence. Some dogs are motivated with a little ball or a frisbee or sometimes a little rag. Some may be motivated, of course, with food, some with higher value food, like a piece of deli meat or something like that. And so what we would want to do is we'd want to increase her confidence by perhaps putting her through situations that normally she wouldn't want to go through, but with the promise of this high value reward, such as a little deli meat. Real basic things, you can maybe at a packing store get some bubble wrap and some flattened out cardboard boxes. If she has any sort of hesitation walking over cardboard boxes, perhaps with the bubble wrap under the cardboard boxes to make for a little bit more instability and sound. If she has difficulty with that, then that could be one little step that you can start doing with her, promising that little piece of deli meat in front of her so that little by little you can start building her confidence. This is one of these things that we'd have to assess. If she just goes right through the cardboard box, then clearly that would not be an exercise for her. However, I still will go back to making sure that she is physiologically okay before you delve into trying to resolve any psychological issues.
Yes, we play with her, you know, and with the toys, and we take her to the park, and she plays. But she actually stays away from other dogs once we just near us, which I also find kind of strange as well. So I thought she may have, like, psychological problems, but we'll give that a shot to see how it works.
Okay. Thanks for calling, Peter. Good luck.
Thank you.
Okay. Nia says, how does the death of one pet affect the other pets? I have three mid-age doggies, all nearly the same age, and they're best friends.
That's a very good question. Mm-hmm. And it actually brings us back to what I wanted to share about this issue. You know, grieving is a process. We've all heard about the five stages of grief, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance. Pets grieve too. You've got to realize that dogs, at some level, often understand passing just like people do. They can become depressed. They can lose interest in food or play. They may wander around the house as if they were looking for their missing housemate. And it can persist any time from several days to several weeks. One thing that I find is helpful is, for example, I've got two dachshunds. I know that one's going to pass before the other. I'll probably make sure that the surviving one gets the older one's blankie, and it has some kind of scent to reassure him, because he's kind of if there's a beta dog, he worships the older one, and he's going to be utterly lost without her. And I think that she, in a sense, I can see my need to comfort him as being one way out of my own grief.
What about replacing animals? Like, is there a time that's just too soon, or? I know they're not replaceable, but.
Personally, you know, I think I have a great home for a dog. So when that happens, yes, I think getting another dog is a good idea. You know, just as you just said, it's not a replacement. It's a new chapter in life.
Right.
And if you've got enough love to be with a dog during their entire life to the end, then there's another soul out there that needs you.
Right.
And I think that there's a reason why we have pets in our lives. I honestly believe it makes me a better person. I think it teaches us to love. I mean, Lord, what we're dealing with as a topic today is a topic that is shunned in the human world. And yet here we are talking about loss and dealing with it. And that, I think, makes us better people.
And we don't have the choice as humans to have this humane way of...
Well, and that actually does bring me on to another point. We talk about whether or not to do this. There's the how to do this, and there's a concept, again, this lapoflove.com, it's a veterinary group dedicated towards this process. They talk about something called a death plan. I hate the word, but it's part of dealing with this is to use the word.
Okay.
And what you're basically invited to consider is if your dog had one day left on Earth, what would he or she want to do with it? What would be the happiest day on Earth? And make it happen. Make if possible, within the limits of the pet.
Right. And of their infirmity.
And their infirmity. I know my little dog's favorite thing on the planet is to go to Key West and lick stale beer off Duval Street and be fawned over by drag queens and to watch the sun go down over Mallory Park. That will probably be her last day with me.
What about the decision to be there or not? I know a lot of people grapple with that. I've always been there, but I know many people who haven't.
Personally, I would say that that's our last duty to the pets that have loved us all their lives. Even if it's hard. And I would say that, too. You know, people ask about whether or not to involve their children. It's their dog, too. And in a sense, it's part of life. My own personal feeling is that ideally we should be with our pets to the end, because that's kind of the way we repay them for all those years.
Let's talk to Sam in Kendall, who has a question. Welcome, Sam.
Hello, good afternoon. I wanted to share an aspect of this that has not been discussed by Dr. Kupke.
Go ahead. You're welcome to. Oh. Well, I don't know. His call dropped off. What was written there was the cost of euthanasia.
Oh. That really depends on who is providing the service. It depends on a lot of things. I would say call your veterinarian and start there.
Right.
This Lap of Love company actually offers an at-home service. And I know it's more expensive, but on the other hand, there's a lot of nice things about an at-home service. But it's really something you'd have to ask whoever's providing the service.
I don't know if that answered your question, Sam, but if it didn't, you're welcome to call back. Paola has a Siamese cat who's 14 years old, is getting fluids for the last year for kidney problems, has arthritis. She kept her weight on until a few months ago. Now she's 2.5 pounds.
Wow.
Today she was seen by the vet. We were told she's in the last stages of kidney failure, but she eats and drinks water. She does not seem in pain, but I don't know if I should do it now or just let her go by herself. We talked about that. That usually doesn't happen. When she gets the fluids, she feels better for a couple of days, but then she goes downhill.
Managing a kitty cat for a year with kidney failure is amazing. So well done already. I think in this situation, the kicker would be whether or not she still eats. She seems to be responding to fluids. She seems to be eating. But I would, again, go back to that quality of life assessment. And, you know, this paper I keep referring to, it isn't gospel, but I just find that when you're grappling with a difficult decision, it's sometimes helpful to break it down and ask yourself, is your pet able to eat and drink? Is your pet able to control their potty habits? Are they responsive to us? Going back to the gentleman with the dachshund, does he wag his tail? Kidney failure, from what I understand, I knew a human who had this, is like dealing with flu all the time. So it's not pain as in the pain you would endure standing on a nail.
Mm-hmm.
It's pain as in generally achy and blah. And what she said was when her kidney issues were acting up, the last thing on God's earth she wanted to do was eat. So what I find when I'm dealing with parents of cats with kidney problems, to me the eating thing is really the kicker. When they stop eating, that's her telling you it's time.
All right. This one looks like it's for you, Adele. And we're talking to Megan in Lighthouse Point. Welcome, Megan.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have an unusual question, but I have a golden retriever, and she's about 40 years old, and I'm living on a boat with her and my husband, and you know, she's adjusted very well to living on the sailboat. However, when we go out for long sails, I can't get her to go to the bathroom on the boat. And the last trip we did, we were out for over a day, and everything I read said, oh, she'll go eventually, she'll go at some point, and she held it for about 30 hours until the point where we were so concerned we had to go back and dock to get her onto land and to let her do her business. So I just wanted to know if you have any advice for that, or if we, you know, she's healthy and she's good. Thankfully, I guess we didn't wait too long, but we'll never go that long again. So if there's any advice you have, that'd be appreciated.
Okay, go ahead, Ned.
Sure. I've actually worked with this case. I have a client of mine currently traveling the world in a sailboat. And he had a blue heeler, and he was just used to going in grass all the time. You know, one of the things that we did, we used this piece that he bought from a retail store. I think it was Bed Bath & Beyond. Yes. That has a fake grass a tray underneath. Yeah. And what we did was, before he had to go traveling, we started getting the dog, who was already used to going outside on the grass anyways. We started, instead of just opening the door and letting him go to the backyard, we actually took him on a leash over to the boat, crossed into the boat, and went on the fake grass. And we had to keep doing this. And it does take a while. I had a dog that would never, ever, ever go on a leash, only loose. We had concrete done in the back, and we couldn't let the dog go loose, and I had to take her for walks on a leash. It took her, I think it was close to 3 days, 2.5 days to actually have a bowel movement. So when they're very uncomfortable, they may actually hold it for a very extended period of time. Not good for them. So one of the best things you could do, if you have the availability of doing it, is to get her used to going in the boat. Certain things like drinking water, eating, and then you go for a walk. And then as you see the walk relatively close by to the boat, if possible, and then you see that she's kind of positioning to go, and then you run right back to the boat with her and then hang out by the grass there a little bit. Also, if she's done some stuff outside, in a piece of grass outside, you want to collect that. And you want to take it in. You may not need the entire amount, but some of it. And you want to collect it actually without the dog seeing you placing it at the new area, like the fake grass area on the boat. And so perhaps your husband takes her in an area, and then you come and put that stuff there. Her pee or poop, pee you may rub, poo you just kind of put there on the side. And let her come to it and sniff it there, and let her smell that and start making the association. It may take a little bit, but generally within a few days you can get her going there on something like that in the boat.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, thanks, Megan. We have Ryan, who's very despondent, and I'll try and. He is a 4.5-year-old, 86-pound black lab who's always exhibited fear aggression. They've worked unsuccessfully with a trainer to modify his behavior. He's bitten two people, his wife and his 3-year-old child, or a 3-year-old child. Even with these issues, we're resolved to work with him, continuing training and try to get him help and get him better. Over the past 3 weeks, after one night of being sick, he's completely changed his demeanor. He's completely different, panicky, bonkers, incontinent, destructive, anxious. We've had a blood test. It came back normal. We can't recognize who this dog is and are shocked at the rapid progression. He wants no physical contact. He's outwardly aggressive towards me. I'm fearful of a mauling of my wife or myself. What should we try? Intense training, medication? It's Ryan and Sunrise.
This is a case that I think really requires some attention right away. This is very important. We don't want anybody getting bit by this dog. At the same time, we really need to assess where we're at with this dog psychologically. If a blood panel has come back negative, and other tests that need to get done have indeed shown that the dog doesn't have a physical issue, then we really want to get to the psychological part of it. For one, I'd like to know some more background on this particular dog, but without knowing any background, just taking what is there now, I can tell you some of the real basic things that we need to go back to is find something that really, really motivates this dog. If you free feed the dog, for example, then the dog may not be really motivated with food. However, if you start adding a little structure with the feeding, put the food down and take it up the second he moves away from the bowl, and let him know he's going to miss a few meals until he actually goes and eats right away when you put the food down. Now he's going to have a greater motivation for that food, and now we can start using some of that food to motivate him to do other things that we may want him to do in our direction.
Could they have missed something on the blood tests?
Well, I was going to say that there are many blood tests. If they ran a routine screen, I would still look at hormonal issues. I would look at, this is a disease called Cushing's disease, characterized by overwhelming amounts of cortisol in the pet's bloodstream. And this does sound like what we call roid rage. Did they test for that? That's not a test where you just draw one sample and send it to the lab. It's actually a test where you have to draw two samples, one T equals zero and one at an hour after an injection of a special medicine. Send the test to the lab and they tell you yes or no for Cushing's. And a good thorough physical exam too to make sure there's nothing neurological going on with this dog.
I sent both of you his email, Ryan's email. So both Adele and Dr. Kupke, perfect, you'll have it if you want to correspond with Ryan. We're speaking with Dr. Ian Kupke of Sable Chase Animal Clinic and Adele Miedes of Canine Advisors about our pets. We're going to take a short break on today's topical currents and we'll be right back with you. Welcome back to an At Your Service edition of Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman with Dr. Ian Kupke, a veterinarian from Sable Chase Animal Clinic, lead veterinarian there and owner. And Adele Miedes is an animal behaviorist and dog trainer from Canine Advisors. And our number, I see a couple of calls fell off. Well, because it takes a while to get to you because there are a lot of callers. 1-800-743-9576. Email is radio at WLRN.org. Let's talk to Susan in Fort Lauderdale. Hi, Susan. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Sure.
So my husband and I have had 5 cats and we're on our 4th German Shepherd since 1989. And over the years, I've had to euthanize, over time, my pets. And I just wanted to share, I had a German Shepherd female. She had a urinary blockage. She was about 11. And it was heartbreaking. She couldn't urinate. It was building up. I took her to the vet. First time when they diagnosed it, they said they thought it was scar tissue. And so they went in with a needle and they relieved her bladder. But it was like she had a constant urinary tract infection. She was trying to urinate. Her legs were giving out. So the next day, we prepared my children. And I put her in the car with my other German Shepherd, my male, who was a few years younger, and drove her to school that day. We decided to go ahead, and my kids were outside. They said goodbye to her. I drove her to McDonald's. Oh, she got to sit in the front seat, which was she never did, so she thought it was like a really big deal. She got a burger with bacon. And I took her to the vet. I did bring my other dog in the room, and they euthanized her. It was very difficult, but I think my other dog, like when she went out, he knew. He just felt like, okay, this is over. We're done, and I'm ready to go. He never looked back. Like when we got home, he was fine. And then since then, he recently, just in December, they said he might have had like ALS, like Lou Gehrig's disease, in the middle of his spine. And it was very sad because if you looked at his face and the upper half of his body, he looked beautiful. He was about 11 or 12, which is a good age for a shepherd. And he looked totally healthy, but he would sit and he really couldn't move. And again, I had to make the decision to just put him down. And I just want to say to people who are going through that, it does get easier. And you just have to put your pet first and be strong for them.
Well, one of the things that...
Thank you, Susan.
I remembered a client telling me. She actually had her six-year-old boy present during the passing of one of their pets. And one of the adults had mentioned that he wished he knew why our pets never seem to have enough time on Earth. And to everyone's astonishment, the little boy answered what was supposed to be a rhetorical question. And the little guy said, "People are born so that they can learn to live a good life, like loving everybody all the time and being nice, right?" Well, he concluded, "Dogs already know how to do that, so they don't have to stay as long." Mm-hmm. So, moral of the story, never understand what children are capable of processing. In a sense, sometimes they see things more clearly than we do.
Thank you, Susan, for sharing that.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
We have some questions I want to get to from our WLRN Miami Herald News staff, if we could just do them, kind of touch on these. What are several effective and inexpensive things we can do about dog breath? What do you do if pets are allergic to breath treat thingies?
Well, the short answer is we need to get into the habit of brushing our dog's teeth. And I know some of our more mature generations don't remember doing that as kids. But then when I was a kid, we went to our own dentist every year, and now my dentist wants to see me twice a year. So things change, things evolve. Brushing your dog's teeth using a decent toothpaste, best one out there is something called CET, which stands for canine enzymatic toothpaste. You do it last thing at night before they go to bed. Don't let them rinse their mouths out. And it helps. A lot of the time, dogs have bad breath because their teeth need to be cleaned. Especially if you've got a small dog. If you've got a small dog and your dog's teeth haven't been cleaned in the last year or 2 years,
time to
get them cleaned.
All right. If a dog is accustomed to sleeping with its human and the human has to leave town, what's the best way to handle its care while away?
Well, many options. All of them going to be involving changes to the dog. If you have a pet sitter that you trust or a relative that you trust, and that's going to work for you. Some people use boarding facilities. Sometimes that makes it a vacation for the dog. There's excellent boarding facilities out there that involve dogs able to go in runs and play, and basically it's a vacation for them too. And there are a lot of just decent quality boarding facilities. We actually board our clients' pets. They get lots of love on TLC. Main thing is to make sure your dog is kept, or a cat, is kept out of harm's way. As Adele was saying at the beginning of the program about keeping the wire-haired dachshund out of trouble, they can't be left loose in the house to be checked in on once in a while. They need to be basically monitored so they don't do things that they shouldn't be doing.
Okay, Del, here's one for you. It's from Sarah. Listen to the show all the time. I have a 3-year-old Chihuahua Catahoula?
Mm-hmm. Catahoula.
Catahoula lab mix rescue, who's very vocal. It's usually not a problem, but sometimes people and smaller dogs are afraid of her when she gets excited and gets loud. She's not aggressive or growling. Are there any training techniques to help her to be, teach her to be less vocal?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
That dog being vocal like that is generally displaced anxiety. So she's very anxious about going to the people and the dog. She wants to go and say hello. And a lot of times that anxiety, if it's allowed to continue, can then lead to pulling and lunging and so forth. Something that's really important is, people oftentimes feel that in order to stop that, they want to move really quick to the other dog. And therefore, your dog will now get rewarded for that behavior and then continue doing that negative behavior. So what's really important is that we can redirect that dog, and therefore redirecting her anxiety elsewhere, or at least lowering her anxiety. So essentially, one of the things to do, we got to see what motivates that dog, but squeaky balls work generally very well. to get the dog's attention. So a lot of times they see another dog across the street, they start getting all antsy, their whiny voices come out, and so you do a little squeak with a ball that might be in your pocket, for example, and then all of a sudden she turns around, you praise that immediately, and then walk towards the other direction. It's just something really, really basic. There's certainly work that can be done towards that, including higher structure for a more anxious dog, generally works very well. But just something to be able to manage it would be to use something like a sharp sound that the dog already equates with something fun, something exciting, and get the dog to look away towards you and then move away, praising the dog so that you do not continue letting the dog go into that high anxiety state.
Okay, and let's speak to Gabby. We don't have much time, Gabby. We just have about a minute to get your question about your cat urinating on your furniture.
Yes, hello.
Hi, go
Hi.
Ahead.
Thank you very much for answering my call. So we have a Savannah F4, and yeah, for some reason, she usually, we usually find pee spots. You know, it's not actually like a full, you know, like full urine. It would just be, you know, pee marks on especially fabric, either the bed or any fabric furniture.
What
we
you're
have.
Looking at there is marking behavior, and unfortunately, your F4s are basically closer to a wild cat than a domestic, if you will.
Is it neutered or spayed?
Yes, she is.
So it's a complicated subject. The first thing to do is to make sure there's nothing biological going on. Urinary tract infections will cause marking. Diabetes will cause it appropriate urination. And all that needs to be ruled out first. And then there's the whole behavioral aspect where you're basically having to define where the marking behavior is happening, why it's happening. There's a lot to go over. I would say that would be something you'd need to sit down with a veterinarian and basically work through the problem to get to a solution. But first thing to do is to check out biological causes.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks so much for calling, Gabby. So, and one last question, and I'm sorry we don't have much more time for callers. My cousin's small dog snarls and snaps at most other dogs. My little mutt, also a female Chihuahua mix, has learned to do the same in return. How did we get these two beasts to get along? We plan to go out of town and want to leave one caretaker for both of them. Adele?
Lucky caretaker. So here's the thing. When you have two dogs, especially a dog that might have learned a negative behavior from another dog, what's really, really important is to work with each dog individually and make sure that each dog gets an additional level of control and structure individually, and then you can start putting them together. So the best advice I can give you if you're working with a trainer or behaviorist is work on each dog individually, make sure that the basics are in place with each dog individually, and then you can start putting them together and you have a much higher successful rate.
Okay, and for those callers and emailers, we'll send the emails to Dr. Kupke and Adele Mieres, and your Dr. Ian Kupke of Sable Chase Animal Clinic, your website?
Is sablechaseanimalclinic.com. So it's Sabal, chaseanimalclinic.com.
And Adele, yours is?
K9advisors.com, letter K, number 9, advisors.com.
And we want to thank you all for being with us today. Sorry we didn't get to you, Nordell or Dennis. Maybe we can after. Our program is producers Richard Ives, with technical direction from our online producer, Paul Leary. Free audio archives and downloads at WLRN.org, and information at our Facebook page, facebook.com/topicalcurrents.